Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Maybe you've heard of the TED Radio Hour, which airs on 89.7 NPR News at 3 p.m. on Saturdays. You know that TED is a nonprofit organization devoted to ideas worth spreading. It started as a four-day conference 25 years ago and since has grown to global proportions with independent TEDx events sprouting up around the world. One of the first was in Columbus, and we'll talk about that later. Joining us now is Guy Raz, who took over as host of the TED Radio Hour in March. Welcome to the show, Guy.
And it's great to be here.
So this probably doesn't happen too often to you, but do you ever come across someone who hasn't heard of TED, and how do you describe it to them?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because occasionally we do, and, you know, people say, who is TED, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've been asked that question. And usually I say, oh, he's my friend, but then we explain that it stands for technology, entertainment, design. That it was a conference, as you described, it began about 25, 30 years ago, and that essentially it's an organization devoted to bringing great ideas to the public, to people around the world. And that are available, that are accessible through the internet, ideas about education and memory and incredible innovative technology and inventions, really just inspiring talks that anybody can go see at TED.com. There are almost 2,000 of these talks at that website. And, you know, for me, and I think for a lot of people who've sort of gotten into them, it's just a sort of a piece of wonder every day. It's like a moment of inspiration, and it kind of it's like an energy boost. It's like taking a 5-hour energy shot, you know, and you watch them because they're just really inspiring. And
I guess I probably listened to a lot of TED Talks. Well, I know I did before I knew what it was, and
yeah.
Then the organizer here said, "You know what TED is?" I'm like, "No." But I listened to lots of the talks during research and that sort of a thing. Were you a fan of TED long before?
Yeah. You know, I was. I mean, I wasn't as familiar with TED as mm-hmm. I am now, and certainly haven't watched as many talks as I have now because we watch hundreds. I mean, I've probably seen many, many hundreds of them now because, of course, we have to design the show each week. But I wasn't. I mean, I wasn't as familiar with it. I had seen some. I thought they were really interesting, but I didn't understand how important and how influential the organization and its and the ideas that it spreads, how influential it is, not just in the U.S., but around the world. It's extraordinary.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Guy Raz, host of the TED Radio Hour. You can hear that on our 89.7 NPR News at 3 p.m. on Saturdays. Your show, Guy, or the TED Radio Hour, which I love the name of, by the way, the show has been compared to a cross between This American Life and Radiolab, both of which air on 89.7. What do you make of that comparison?
Well, there's no question that, you know, This American Life really fundamentally changed radio, you know, as did Radiolab. I mean, those shows are so important in the history of our medium. And there's no question that there are elements of our show that really pay homage to some of the things that those programs pioneered. I mean, we you know, I grew up listening to This American Life. I've been hugely influenced by Radiolab, by what they do, and our team has been as well. And so, you know, there is no question that those shows have an impact on how we think about storytelling and about radio storytelling, about bringing radio to life, you know, having radio jump out of the radio in almost like a 3D or a 4D way. Absolutely. Those shows are amazing. I'm a huge fan of those shows. And anyone who was to make a comparison between our show and theirs, to me, is, wow, you know, what an incredibly flattering comparison to make.
When you're listening to the TED Talks, when one listens to them, you think all the questions you might have for a person like that, and how exciting that would be to talk to them, because these people are curated. I mean, what they're by the time they make it to TED, it's pretty fantastic. How do you approach the after interviews? How do you decide, you know, what you're going to talk to them about?
You know, our show essentially is a storytelling show, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's about ideas, and we pick a theme every week. And I'm oftentimes we'll start with a theme. You know, for example, I really wanted to do a show about collaboration, and I wasn't sure. We're not always sure if there are enough talks to support an idea we might have. But in the case of collaboration, there were. And we'll watch, you know, 10, 15, 20 talks that might work in that show and then narrow it down to 5 or 6 that we want to do. And then narrow it down further to usually to 5 that we'll interview. And what we try to do is we try to tease out stories that they may have alluded to briefly. You only get 18 minutes on the TED stage.
At right? most, right.
So we're looking for, there might be a moment, a line, or an acknowledgement of something that goes unsaid. And we want to tease that out because we want to build a story around the idea. Because as you know, I mean, storytelling is the most effective way to get an idea across on the radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll do is, you know, we'll usually call the person up and sort of kind of, if I have a chance, I'll talk to them and sort of explain what we're trying to do and ask them to really think deeply about the themes from their talk and things that they didn't say, things that they didn't talk about. We'll often read their books to get a sense of other stories that weren't mentioned in the talk but that relate to their TED talk. So it's the idea is to use the talk as a jumping off point to really, you know, dive deeply into the idea that they're putting up there on the TED stage.
Does the topic, the theme of the show change the format ever in any way?
I mean, we have a pretty, I mean, the way that we try to do it, and it's I think it's pretty basic, is, you know, when we launched the show in March, you know, we were talking for, I used to host All Things Considered on the weekend, as you may know, and, mm-hmm. and I came to this show in January. And when we started to rethink how we wanted to put the show together, one of the ideas that we really wanted to focus on was how to open the show up. We wanted the show's open to be something so compelling, so interesting that you had to keep listening to it. You know, I've got a 4-year-old son, and when I'm cooking in the kitchen listening to the radio, if he's pulling on my pants saying, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy," and I turn to him and I say, "Yes," then I know that the radio is not compelling enough, right? But if I turn to him and I say, "Shh, keep it down," I know that the radio has done its job because I need to hear what's going on. And that was the test for us. We wanted the opening of the show to be so compelling that listeners would do that, you know? And so that's really how we begin each show. We have to find a story that's going to just draw us in, or a moment. And then we kind of take it from there. It's like writing the opening sentence. You know, once you write the opening sentence, things just tend to kind of flow from there.
Once you know what it's about. When you contact TED presenters from the past, like you do, does the TED organization work with you to do that? How do you approach them? Do they always want to participate?
They always want to participate, yeah. I mean, you know, part of it is NPR and part of it is TED. And we are, you know, we're now broadcast all over the country, which is terrific, and also internationally. We're on the radio in several African countries, Australia and South Asia. We work very closely with our partners at TED. We meet with them once a week via video conference because we're based at NPR in Washington, D.C., and TED is in New York City. And we really kind of we give them a sense of what we want to do, what kind of show we want to do, and they have incredible institutional knowledge. So they might say, "Oh, that's a great topic. We love these speakers. You might want to think about this person. Have you seen that talk?" And oftentimes we'll say, "No, that sounds great," and we'll go check it out. And they'll have ideas of themes to explore. So it's a very collaborative process. In terms of the production, it all takes place at NPR. You know, everything from calling the guests to getting them into studios to doing the research and the script writing and the actual radio production happens here at NPR in Washington.
Do you ever consider TEDx talks for the show?
Oh, we've used TEDx talks on the show. Absolutely. We used the TEDx talk on our second show, actually. Oh. It was Phil Plait, who was an astronomer, and he gave a TEDx talk in Colorado, in Boulder, and it was a terrific talk. It was about asteroids and try, he's an asteroid tracker. And what would we do as humans if we knew that we had 3 years before an asteroid was going to hit the Earth? It's a fascinating, funny, beautiful talk. So we use TEDx talks all the time. I mean, our only criteria is it has to be a well-delivered talk. It has to be, the audio has to be good, and it has to have an interesting story. So, in fact, we just used a TEDx talk on a recent show we did about millennials, about people under the age of 30, you know, between the ages of 18 and 33, or 12 and 33. And we look for those kinds of talks all the time.
Do you have any sense about what the impact of having TED Radio Hour has had on TED?
You know, it's a funny thing. You would think there would be a tremendous crossover in our audiences, but what we found is there isn't. I mean, our audience is really, it's a mass audience, right? In the U.S., we have a mass audience on public radio, and it's primarily an audience that listens to us because of our news programming. That is the vast majority of listening across the country. TED has a massive global audience. I mean, they have a huge presence around the world in terms of the TEDx events. They have TED Global every year. You know, their videos have been seen a billion times. So it's surprising. I'm constantly meeting people who say, you know, I never really got in this, never really knew what TED was or got into it, but now it's just really cool. It's really interesting. Similarly, we're reaching TED fans who weren't really necessarily public radio listeners, not because they didn't like the content, just because, you know, they might live in Silicon Valley or New York City. They might not drive. They might walk to work, or they might use public transport. Their lives just aren't sort of don't kind of revolve around listening to public radio, and that is starting to change too, which is just incredible.
Well, Guy Raz, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Ann.
That's Guy Raz. He's host of the TED Radio Hour. You can hear it at 3 p.m. on Saturdays on 89.7 NPR News. TED started as a four-day conference about 25 years ago and has since grown to global proportions with independent TEDx events sprouting up around the world, including one in Columbus, and we're going to talk about that when we return. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Maybe you've heard of the TED Radio Hour, which airs on 89.7 NPR News at 3 on Saturdays. You know that TED is a nonprofit organization devoted to ideas worth spreading. It started as a four-day conference 25 years ago and since has grown to global proportions with independent TEDx events sprouting up around the world. One of the first 30 out of 6,000 now, was in Columbus, and we'll talk about that. Later, one of the first independently organized offshoots, there were 8 speakers at that one, and about an audience of about 300. Last year, TEDx Columbus attracted an audience of 6,000. Did I get that right? My guest right now is one of the founders of TEDx Columbus. She founded it in 2009 and has curated and coached nearly every one of the 75 speakers that has taken the stage since then. Ruth Milligan, welcome to the show, Ruth.
Thanks for having us back.
Now, the 6,000 sounded like more than I remember.
Well, if you add the live audience that we had,
right,
which was 725, and then we had 4,000 or 5,000 independent hits to the live stream.
Right. And then people were watching it remotely as well, right?
Right, through the live stream,
right,
which we'll do again this year.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome back to the show.
Yes, it's always fun.
I still remember the first time you and I had coffee, and you said, I need to talk to you about something. Have you ever heard of TED? And it wasn't until a while of talking I finally figured out, well, I had, but I didn't know what it was.
Right.
Can you tell people what it is?
So about 30 years ago, actually.
Oh, okay.
A guy wanted to have a dinner party with some interesting people, but he knew they'd never come. So this is the folklore that I've been told.
Okay.
And instead, he had a conference called TED. He had it halfway between Silicon Valley, technology, and entertainment and design, Hollywood, and L.A. And he had it in Monterey, and he invited those people to come and give talks of 18 minutes or less.
Now, so this guy wasn't just any guy, because no one would come to this if I started it. His name was
Richard Saul Warman, and he was a, you know, big technology guy.
Yeah.
I don't know his bio.
Yeah.
And so he continued to grow this conference. And in 2003-ish, a guy named Chris Anderson, there's two Chris Andersons in the tech field. This was the one that started Business 2.0.
Okay.
Bought the company, and turned it into a nonprofit. And, you know, I don't speak for TED. I'm just sort of sharing the knowledge that I have. And decided that these talks needed to be posted online. So in 2006, they launched TED.com. So the conference was around for all those years without any internet presence. And that's when it became really global. And people were able to access the talks for free. And then the next phase was, you know, sort of where we came in 2009.
Now, not just anybody can go to a TED conference, the annual TED conference. Is it still in Monterey? And it's you have to be invited. And you also have to pay.
That's right. So the big TED conference actually is moving to Vancouver this year.
Oh, okay.
It is $7,500 for the week. You have to come with references and an application, and it's very exclusive. There is a viewing event that I've been to for 3 years, which will be in Whistler this year. It's always a little bit far away. It's a lot less expensive. You sit and watch in big beanbag chairs the 4 days, 70 or 80 talks with really cool friends. So there's a way to see the live stream but still watch it with others.
Uh-huh.
So those are the two primary ways you get to go to the big TED, as we say.
And there are 6,000 TEDx.
Correct.
Organizations around the world now.
So we should probably define what X means.
Right.
So in 2009, they started getting all these requests for the conference to keep moving. Can you come and bring the TED conference here and here? And they said, let's figure this out. So they announced this franchise or license program, which is called TEDx. And they launched it in March of 2009. And I saw the post on the blog the day after they posted it and decided at that moment I would apply and try to run the TEDx Columbus. And so that was 4.5 years ago. Who knew we'd still be doing it?
Did you think you'd still be doing it?
I had no idea.
You didn't know what you were getting into.
Nancy Kramer, who's my co-curator and co-founder and partner in crime, and I have always said, you know, we get through each one and we decide after that if we're going to do it again. So we'll have to make a hard choice this year.
How many offshoots are there from TEDx Columbus now?
So, you know, not that there's a direct correlation, but we've coached and helped and mentored, you know, at least a dozen TEDx's that are around Ohio. I coach speakers in San Diego. I coach speakers in Vail that are
affiliated with all over the place.
TEDx. One of our proudest collaborations is with Ohio State, which then in turn helped to create the first adult prison TEDx in the world at Marion Correctional, which is really an unbelievable story. Jody was on with us
last year.
Mm-hmm. And the trickle effect of that has gone to Sing Sing and Alcatraz and across the world. I mean, there's a whole social justice TEDx initiative that's really been born largely out of what's going on at Marion.
Now, I know there are people who are listening, watching from all over the place, from Akron to Cincinnati. There is a TEDx Akron. There's a TEDx Youngstown.
Yes.
A TEDx Way Public Library.
You know, there's a library license. There's a cinema license.
That's in Perrysburg, yeah.
There's about 10 different kinds of licenses. Uh-huh. Battelle and Cardinal Health have corporate licenses. There's libraries that are hosting them, universities. And then we have a major city community license for Columbus. So
TEDx Toledo, TEDx Worcester, you know, you want to check. There may be a TEDx near you.
And if not, you can apply. The license is free.
When do you decide to have a TEDx? Can you have it whenever you want?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you want to have a TEDx, so quickly, we had one for our after-school kids last year. So we had 5, 6, 7, and 8-year-olds get up and give a one-minute talk, and we did it in 1 hour at their after-school program. Then we did the first TEDx at Battelle. We had 8 scientists on stage for a lunch, and we'll have 24 different speakers and performers next Friday in front of 750 live people for all day at COSI. So you can design it however you want, and you can have it whenever you want as long as you meet the license requirements that are online.
How do you resist the urge to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger? You don't.
It's I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, we're saturated right now. We've hit our limit, and so part of it is keeping it intimate enough so that all the attendees still feel it's a great experience. So we could go and have a 2,000 person event like they did in Sydney, which was a phenomenal event at the Sydney Opera House. But I'm not so sure we wouldn't lose some of the soul that we like to have at our event, where you get to see people you know and also meet new people and not feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, it definitely is a place where you can rub out. You just bump into people you know that you didn't expect to see there, certainly didn't plan to. So in February, you were invited, along with five other TEDx organizers from around the globe, to talk about the phenomenon of TEDx. Tell us about that experience and what you shared with people.
So it was really quite special. There were six of us, and it you'd said earlier, there were actually somebody from Madrid, Sydney, Kibera, which is a suburb in Kenya, of Nairobi, I think, someone from Iraq, and then there were actually two of us.
Oh.
The other one was from Ohio State.
Oh, okay.
It was Jordan Edelheit, who is the founder of TEDx Ohio State, because she also is the co-founder of the Marion Correctional. So she went with her Marion Correctional hat on. But the six of us were on stage at a special TEDx Inside moment inside the larger TED conference on the stage in Long Beach. And it was scripted and it was very orchestrated, but it was a lot of fun. And to be on stage with that global community, just the six of us, was pretty remarkable. I mean, we all had 10 lines we had to remember, and it's not posted. They won't repost it. But just the spirit that I could be on the stage with those folks is pretty remarkable. So it was a great experience.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Right now I'm talking with Ruth Milligan. She's one of the co-founders and co-curator of TEDx Columbus. If you want to learn more about the event, which occurs next week, you can go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. I think it's basically sold out at this point.
I was going to say it is sold out.
But there may be other opportunities to watch it elsewhere.
Correct. I would direct everyone to the McConnell Arts Center in Worthington, in your backyard.
That's right.
And it's free, and they are graciously hosting the entire day. So if you still want to watch the talk with friends, just pull up to McConnell and go on in and have a seat, and they'll see the exact same program that you'll see if you were live at Cosi.
And it's a beautiful venue there as well. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun. Once again, 614-292-8513. If you have a question about TEDx Columbus or the TED concept in general, you can talk to Ruth Milligan. And we have an email from Marianne. She says, I have read that TEDx has banned any talks dealing with GMOs. Is that because of corporate sponsorship?
No, it has nothing to do with corporate sponsorship. And I don't speak to this issue. This is a TED issue, but you can go back and look.
It's not TEDx has banned.
It's not about it. The bigger issue is they want research to be presented on stage that is accurate and authentic and empirical. And what happened was there were a few TEDx talks around the world, I can't remember where they were, that were presenting science that wasn't real. And so that's what there was a post that went around a few weeks ago. And this isn't my place to be speaking on behalf of this, but this is just my knowledge, that tried to spin it a different way. And really, the issue is it's making sure that there's science that's being presented is real.
But that's true of all of the science. I mean, how do you curate and make sure that what you're having someone talking about is authentic or is reliable
Well, you pick people with titles like professor, because like then you know that someone else has vetted their science for you, because you don't have professor in your title if you've done bunk research. At least that's the way I approach it.
Well, let's just go and say that joining us now are two of the speakers booked for the 2013 TEDx Columbus next week at Cosi Columbus. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Scott Gowdy is an astronomer, scientist, and trailblazer. He is an associate professor of astronomy at OSU. He looks for planets, orbits that orbit other stars, and he has found several. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Muhammad Ali is the founder of the
IFTIN Foundation.
IFTIN Foundation, an organization that incubates social entrepreneurs, young leaders, and their projects to encourage change and innovation in Somalia. Welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
You both have so many awards and honors. I can't list them all right now. But for more information, once again, go to the link. Go to the TEDx Columbus website and check it out. There's a million things to say about them, and we just don't have time. It's only an hour show. So, Scott, did you audition for a spot on TEDx Columbus, or were you recruited?
I was recruited.
To tell us about what you thought when they first recruited you.
So I always kind of thought to myself that if I ever got asked to do a TED Talk, that I'd finally made it. So when I was finally asked to give a TED Talk, it was a little unbelievable.
Forget the fact that he's a full professor or whatever, right?
It was a little hard to believe and very, very exciting, of course.
And how did you figure out what you would say and how long you'd have to say it? I mean, it's up to 18 minutes,
correct,
but it's every, you know, variation between 1 and 18.
Yes. So I know of very few astronomers and professors that would not take the full amount of time that was given to them during a talk.
Exactly.
So there was no doubt that I was going to use the full time. And actually, I just practiced my speech the other day.
Well, and we're giving him the full time, I should say. Not everyone has 18.
Some people request 18,
but they don't get it, right? How do you make a decision like that, Ruth?
Based on how much content they have, how big of an idea it is that they might need to express. And also, we're looking for diversity. So we may say to someone, we know you have 18, but we really only want you to speak for 12. But there are 7 speakers this year that have 18. There's also a completely different issue where I can't curate 18 talks all day long. I mean, 18-minute talks all day long. The audience will just glaze over.
And, right.
They need to have a short talk and a long talk and a funny talk and a serious talk. And so that's one of the jobs that I have, is to make sure that we're not overwhelming the audience.
One thing I notice with most of the presenters that I've seen and heard is there's always a little bit of humor, a little like kind of a spark at the beginning to just kind of put the, get everybody interested in what you have to say. Muhammad Ali, how are you planning? I mean, is that the way you usually present? I don't want you to give away your talk, but what did you make of the process of preparing for the TEDx talk?
Well, this is actually going to be my 3rd TED talk.
Oh, well, then you're a pro.
The past 2 months, actually.
We forgot to brief you on that part.
at the end of August,
he's
actually
a sandbagger.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So I've been preparing for a long time. At the end of August, I was in Mogadishu, and I spoke at TEDx Mogadishu. And there I spoke about my work and my journey back to Mogadishu. I was born in Mogadishu but left at a very young age. And so I spoke about my journey back. I spent about 19 years here in the U.S. I went to law school here. And after law school, I decided to go into social entrepreneurship. And one of the things I did was go back home and promote entrepreneurship among young Somalis. And so during my TEDx talk, that's what I spoke about.
But he's being modest, so he should ask him. So 2 weeks ago, he spoke on the big TED stage. So.
And 2 weeks later, I was in New York. I was invited to speak at TED City 2.0. TED was organizing an event where they talked about the future of cities. How do we improve cities around the world? And I was coached by Chris Anderson, actually, the head of TED.
Wow.
Which was really exciting. And there I spoke about my trip to Mogadishu and my event that I held there.
What's the coaching like? What do you make of that?
We had several Skype sessions. It was exciting. I mean, it was a long process. We had to go through our talk several times. But the main thing is to tell interesting stories, tell news stories, things people haven't heard. And that's what's really great about TED. It gives you a platform to talk about stories that aren't usually told. For example, one of the stories I told was a young man who helped do an entrepreneurship training for us in Mogadishu. He started the first flower shop in Mogadishu in 22 years. And for the first time in 22 years, you can actually buy fresh flowers in Mogadishu. And I spoke about his story. And I spoke about the stories of young people in Mogadishu who are really changing the city. I think for Mogadishu, often the narrative is about civil war, strife,
Black
anarchy.
Hawk Down,
exactly.
Whatever it was.
yes, exactly. Yeah. And so that's what I love about TED. It gives you this platform to kind of change the narrative.
And Scott Gotti, you're a professor, you're a lecturer. How does the TED Talk differ from a lecture?
Well, so with the lecture, I would probably tend to stick to facts or the flow of the research. But in this case, I'm going to actually talk a little bit about how I came to be an astronomer and my story in that, and try to tie that to then how other people are fascinated by the same questions that actually drove me to become a professional astronomer. Questions like, are there planets out there? Do those planets look like the Earth? And is there life out there?
And so when you thought about, wouldn't it be fun to be a TED, presenter or TEDx, is that what you wanted to talk about originally? Or is this sort of, was the process you went through during?
No, absolutely. It was very clear to me from the very beginning what I would talk about, which is, what drove me to become an astronomer. And really, the main kind of thing that I'm going to try to convey to the audience, and I don't think this is giving anything away, is that we here in human history, we're sort of witnessing a revolution where for the first time in human history, we're able to answer questions that we've wondered about for millennia. Things like I said, is there life out there? And we're actually making significant progress on those questions. And we're all around to see that. And it's very exciting.
We are talking about TEDx Columbus with the founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus, Ruth Milligan. Also, two of the presenters coming up next week at the TEDx Columbus annual event. It's at COSI Columbus. For more information, you can go to the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. We'll continue our conversation. If you have any questions, please do give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out the Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about TEDx Columbus. The 2013 event occurs next week. For more information, you can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. My guests are Ruth Milligan. She's a founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus. Also with us, two of the presenters for next week, Scott Gowdy, an astronomer and associate professor at OSU, and also Muhammad Ali. He's founder of the IFTIN Foundation. So if you have any questions or comments for them, give us a call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ruth, this is your fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
How, and what you do for a living, by the way, is help people prepare speeches and help people prepare for public speaking. How does TEDx and the work you do with that, helping people prepare, differ or not from what you do for a living?
So the first year after the TEDx, the first one we did with Aid on Stage, I looked at all the speakers and I knew exactly their pathway, the ones that did really well and the ones that could have done better. And I asked myself, why aren't I doing more of this? I was a public speaking geek. I used to watch C-SPAN graduation speeches for fun when I was single in the 90s.
She's actually more fun than that. So go ahead.
And I realized that was my, I was a public speaker. I was a speech communication major in college, and my father was an orator.
You wrote speeches for people.
Yeah, and I was a speechwriter for 6 years. So this all sort of wraps up together. And what TEDx did for me was to bring back that 20 years of passion I had and to package it all nicely together. So TEDx becomes a laboratory for my business, and my business becomes, they're very complementary. And it was because of TEDx that I narrowed my public relations practice into only doing coaching and speaking in this area.
And how does it differ when you work with someone like Muhammad Ali? Well, Muhammad, you've got a lot of experience, but maybe Scott Gowdy, who in that particular realm doesn't, although he's probably got a lot of experience too. But how does it differ?
Not much.
Okay.
It differs because I know the audience of TEDx really well, because I'm in the audience. And so I curate and coach them to speak to that particular audience. Someone else has got a totally different purpose, goal, and audience. And so we coach to that. It's depending upon where you are. So if you're speaking to For instance, you're a new executive director of a nonprofit, and this is your first coming out talk, you know, to 900 people who are in your constituency. I'm going to coach with the same sort of philosophy of a TEDx, but I'm going to do it to make sure the audience is in kept central character of the story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. If it doesn't, anyone out there and wants to question me,
exactly. Feel free to drill down. I'll talk about it for hours. It's no problem.
614-292-8513. What about someone, you have had all kinds of speakers now from doing all kinds of stuff. Does anyone ever say, you know what, I just can't do it in 18 minutes? Has anyone ever just said, I can't do it?
Then they don't speak.
Right. Have they, though?
No, but I've had a few people go over. And we have to remedy that. But, you know, I had a speaker call me this week, or their associate call me this week, and the one speaker I really haven't had a chance to work with, and said, is it really only 18 minutes? And I said, yeah, it's really only 18. And we'll turn the music on, guys. We'll turn the music on if you have gone over. So, yeah, I mean, that's just we have a social contract, the audience and the speakers. And the audience comes open-minded, curious, ready to be provoked. And the speakers come ready to provoke and promise not to go over.
18 minutes is a very good time because it forces you to focus your thoughts and, you know, really condense what you want to say and not waste any time. A lot of astronomers, for example, are used to giving 50 or 60 minute talks, and they can be very rambling and very unfocused.
And it's not just astronomers.
Right.
It's just
I'm sure. No doubt.
But Muhammad, you know, you're probably out there giving pitches all the time, raising funds for your organization, raising, you know, trying to generate interest in it. So doing something quick probably came a little bit easier to you after a while, or not?
It took some practice. Just to add to what Ruth was saying with the coaching process, I approached her once I was invited to do the TED City 2.0, and that's how we originally met. I looked her up online, and I saw what she did, her work with TEDx Columbus. And so I sat down with her, and she kind of started with the text. She looked at my transcript, and from there, we spoke about body language, how do you present. It was just a really great process.
I'll say that the biggest difference that I just came to mind is that mm-hmm. I coach the TED speakers with the exclusive end goal in mind that they can't have notes or a podium.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest difference.
Nothing.
And so if they're not willing to do that, then we don't accept them.
They can have visuals, though. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So they can push a button and have visuals to go along with it. But you don't really want them turning around and looking at it and reading it.
No. They're not allowed to turn around. We have a screen for them in front. And they're allowed a note card or two if they need to refer to something. But the speakers that I've heard at TED who are allowed to read, you just turn off after about 3 minutes, even if that's great. David Brooks read his talk, but he's a writer. And I'm not so sure he had the process to take it to the words, the spoken word. We write. We don't write like we talk.
Right.
We just don't. So that might have been a hard shift for him. I don't know. But his was the only one that I've ever heard that was written that was acceptable. Because he's such a good writer. But others who, you know, you have to get him to the point of being comfortable and conversational without notes or a script.
Gail in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Gail.
Yes. I've watched, I believe they were TED talks online before, but I'm really confused if you could clarify the difference between TED and TEDx.
Certainly.
I'm not really sure what the difference is.
So TEDx is the licensed program that affords universities, communities, schools, libraries to host their own local TED events, and therefore they're called TEDx. And we have a license agreement with TED. We apply. We have a certain set of requirements we have to fulfill. They give us the license to use the TED brand and logo. And then, more importantly, we then get access to post our talks on the TEDx channel. Guy Raz talked about how there's 2,000 TED Talks. There's actually 30,000 TEDx Talks. So if you go to TED.com/TEDx, you'll see the channel of all the TEDx Talks. And those are curated, chosen, coached, and produced by local TEDx organizers around the world, of which there are maybe 1,000 of us.
Yeah, so basically it's like a franchise of the original TED out on the West Coast?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. It's still nonprofit, though.
Yes.
There's certain rules you have to follow.
Many.
Yeah, it's 100 pages now.
It's horrible.
But when you started, it was like four or five pages.
I don't know if I've read the update. They may be watching. Sorry, guys. I figured they'll tell me if I'm doing something wrong.
An email from David in Clintonville. This is a good question. Can you compare and contrast TEDx Columbus with Pachacacha in terms of audience, curatorial approach, cost, and impact on Columbus? I'm a fan of both events, but there is a much higher cost to attend TEDx.
So I actually gave a Pachacacha talk this year.
Oh.
So I have a little experience doing that. Pachacacha is 20 slides, 20 seconds a slide. It is as grassroots as it comes. You show up, you bring your own chair, you pay $2 at the door, and you listen to the talks, and the moment is then done. There's no echo or after production. The difference is that we are a large part of our expense is to grab. We have six cameras and a high production value so that Scott and Mohammed and everyone else's talks will go online for everyone else to see free. While the ticket price might be expensive, it actually democratizes the idea because everyone then has access to it. So that's one of the big differences. The other thing is they don't really coach or are very specific about Pachacacha talks. You can actually be self-promotional. You can sell a little bit. From the TED stage, there's absolutely no selling at all. You can barely say, I wrote a book. It's about your idea.
I should just really add to that. During the coaching process for TED City 2.0, the main thing was don't pitch. We want a great idea. We want a brand new idea, but you can't really
say, give me money.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
My big idea was that entrepreneurship can be used as a tool for peace, and entrepreneurship can fight terrorism. And so during my talk, I spoke about how entrepreneurship can go about doing that. For example, in Somalia, 70% of youth are unemployed. They're not working, they're not doing anything. And so they're vulnerable to recruitment by terrorist organizations, being linked into crime. And so entrepreneurship is a way for them to empower themselves. And so those were the stories that I was telling. So it's definitely about the idea and not about the person
in
the
organization.
But what you couldn't do was say, come to my workshop. You know, and sign up here and give me $100, whatever works, you know, whatever you're doing. So it stops at that. So so Pachacacha is a little looser on that. And it's just the moment. I mean, you go and it's a really awesome community moment. And then it's gone where TED has an echo.
Nikki in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Nikki.
Yes, hi. When the question, the comment came up about GMOs, the speaker gave what I thought was a rather flip remark that she only accepts professors as speakers. Oh. So my question is, given that professors do research funded by commercial entities on both sides of the issue, what makes her think that a professor, just because a person is a professor, they would give objective comments on any topic?
Is objectivity your goal, necessarily?
No, not necessarily, and I don't think that was my comment. I think the question was, how do you guarantee that their science had efficacy? And I just asked, I had one comment that said that the university has fairly high ethical standards, at least in my curation of speakers in Columbus. It's not the only way we validate, but we do have some level of, you know, am I validating Scott's slides and research that he's bringing to me? Not necessarily. I'm trusting that he's bringing to me real research based on the fact that he's carrying Ohio State's banner. Now, if someone from someone else, we might do a little bit more diligence, but that the issue that came through were people who were, they were talking about, I would say, gray areas that didn't have empirical research behind them. And that's what got the issue in trouble. And so I'm not as schooled on what the particular GMO thing is, though.
Okay. Thank you, Nikki, for that call. From my experience of listening to TED Talks and TEDx Columbus Talks, there are some pretty strong points of view that you may not agree with.
We hope so.
And it's not... It's unlike this show, which over time, you know, seeks to present all points of view. That's not necessarily your goal.
Not
it's
at all.
Just ideas. So back to the
subjective question, right?
Yeah.
So what makes a TED Talk a TED Talk is a point of view. And we just want to make sure that point of view is fueled by appropriate research is the point. we will have some points of view next week that people will feel very uncomfortable with. And I'm okay with that because I want you to come and be provoked. I want you to, I don't want it to be an easy, like, I've already heard all these points of view. I want you to say, gosh, I never thought about that idea from that angle. I've never, ever put myself in those shoes. That's what makes the TED experience so sort of taffy-like. You know, the emotions that we pull and the experience you have and the knowledge you have all comes together, and it, you get provoked. And that's why you leave extremely tired, too.
Yeah, it's a long day, but in a good way. And there's lunch and that kind of thing.
Tons of breaks. We curate as many breaks and opportunities to talk and meet random people you've never met before as much as it is about the stage presence. So,
an email from Paul. He writes, I find TED Talks to be entertaining, educational, and inspiring. To me, it's a 21st century Chautauqua. TED Talks are available through Roku Channel. Do you anticipate adding TEDx Talks as an official or unofficial private Roku channel? I hope I'm pronouncing Roku right. It's a box that uses your internet connection to deliver audio and video content to your television in any event. Have you been approached on that?
That's a TED question.
Okay.
There is a channel on, I think, don't quote me, but some of the more streaming services have TED. Mm-hmm. I think one of the satellite radios might have a TED channel. I think DirecTV might. You can go online and find them. But yes, I don't know about TEDx talks. 10% of the talks that are on TED.com are from TEDx. So they do migrate some of those over to the larger part of the site. But all of the talks are available, at least on the TEDx channel on YouTube. There's a slight difference, but they're all up there together. They're just two different channels.
We have a few minutes left. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ruth, you had an audition again this year?
We did. We had an open audition for the second
year. What's that like? How many people auditioned? And
we had about 25 people show up this year, and we picked two speakers from the 25. We always get inspired by, I think there might...
Last year was just one speaker.
We had one speaker and a performer.
Okay.
So, and the speaker this year was someone whose husband, who was going to show up and told his wife, I'm too busy. I'm just too busy. I can't do it. And she said, well, then I'll go. And so she came with her own idea and won.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and she has a phenomenal idea unto herself, but she had never thought about herself being that person until her husband's like, I can't go. So he took care of the kids and she came.
Interesting. Yeah. How many, so people show up and are some of them, I mean, what's it like to have people show up and kind of pour their soul out to you in a way? It's their most important thought.
We give them 3 minutes.
Okay.
So it's not a long time to pour out your soul. It's a mini TED Talk. I mean, Jan Allen last year will tell you it was like the hardest 3 minutes she's ever given.
The winner of last year. Yeah.
It's hard. We tell people don't show up and try to wing it because you won't win. And you don't, because you miss the idea and you start wandering in the wilderness. And, you know, it can't just be about you. It has to be about your idea. And a lot of people end up talking about themselves. And that's one way to lose. But we're also looking for contrast and friction and tension and conflict inside the idea that you bring and the solution or point of view that you want to provide. And we're also... you know, now we've had 75 or more speakers. We don't want any redundancy, which, knock on wood, we've not had any.
You mean across the entire history of TEDx Columbus?
That's our challenge to ourselves.
Yeah.
So if you've been all 5 years, you won't hear any two ideas that are the same.
And if you've ever wondered, why don't you ever do this idea, you can always check the website to see if they have.
And it's one of my personal passions, which is one of the things that drives me, is I think Columbus has an unbelievable repository of amazing stuff going on. And this is our way of saying to the world, yeah, look at it. We've got it going on here. And I can have 5 years of talks and not have any two that are remotely the same.
You know, one of the issues some people have brought up to me is, well, now it feels like it's corporate America at the TEDx talks, because companies just buy up bunches of tickets and that kind of a thing. And there's not that integration of people from all walks of life like there were maybe at the beginning.
Sure.
Although those must just have been all like super cool people at the beginning.
No, they were all my friends. Yeah. I had to beg every single one of them to show up.
How do you manage
that
aspect?
We limit the number of a group or a corporate to 10 or 20.
Okay.
Last year we had a problem with that where somebody bought way too many, and there are people that showed up and didn't want to be there because they were told to be there.
Ah.
So we mitigate that by, if you want to purchase for a group, you can only purchase for 10 or 20, then everyone else has to buy on their own. I'd say 60% or more of our attendees have all purchased their tickets by themselves.
Okay. All right.
So, and the other 40% are coming with sponsors who are affording it to keep it to be, you know, not a $200 ticket, but a $100 ticket.
Well, thanks as always for coming and joining and going over a lot of the same stuff, introducing TED and TEDx concepts once again, Ruth Milligan.
Thank you for having us again, Ann. We'll see you next week.
Ruth Milligan, she's the founder and co-curator of TEDx Columbus. Also, Scott Gaudy, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Gaudy is an astronomer and associate professor at OSU, and Muhammad Ali, founder of the Iftin Foundation. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
You can hear Scott and Muhammad next week at TEDx Columbus. Thanks to the All Sides staff. Here we are. It's Thursday already. Producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Kirib Shaban, Julia Hyder, Andrew Zissler, and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Couldn't do it without our WOSU News and Public Affairs and Programming Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of Ohio State University.